Hierdie inset word aan jou gebring met die komplimente van Radio Kaapse Kansel 729 AM. Besoek ons gerus by www.capepulpit.co.za.
Baie welkom by die program Krag van die Bybel, Krag van die Woord van God. Dit is heerlik om op hierdie dag weer net eenvoudig saam met jou onder die heerlike krag van dit wat die Here gee deur sy woord en deur sy gees te kom, om midde in daar te wees. En ons begin deur dat ek vandag dan eers saam te luister na die Bible Project se potgooi, die Exodus Way. Dit is die reeks, maar ons luister vandag na An Exodus Shaped Reality. Een nieuwe werkelijkheid wat die Here voor ons gee deur die Exodus thema en verhaal in die Bybel. En ons het hierdie program juist om op 'n ander manier net eenvoudig te reflekteer en beter te verstaan, maar meer nog die krag van die Gees in ons te ervaar wanneer ons die lewende woord van God lees en dit indrink. Jy is baie welkom om na die Abbo se webwerf, Abbo wat hierdie program aanbied, die webwerf te gaan. Abbo www.abbo.org.za. Of jy kan gerus Marietjie skakel by 084-501-1102. Abbo begin weer binnekort met die nuwe kursusse rondom hoe verstaan ek? Waarom doen mense die dinge wat hulle doen? En hoe kan mense verander? En wat is my rol dan daarin? Om te verstaan hoe ek prakties ander kan begelei in berading. Maar ook om die krag van die woord te verstaan in my lewe. En al hierdie toe te pas dan op baie spesifieke probleme wat ons as mense ondervind, gelowiges en ongelowiges, en hoe ons kan kom by hierdie nuwe lewe in die Here. Skakel gerus vir Marietjie by 084-501-1102. En dan kan jy ook 'n berader bel by Kaapse Kansel. Enige tyd kan jy inskakel op die werksdae. En die nommer is 021-180-5744. Skakel gerus in. En dan gesels jy met 'n berader wat saam met jou sal luister en bid ook hieroor. En dit alles gebeur in die grootse vertroulikheid. So jy kan rustig wees en inbel as jy wil gesels oor probleme waarmee jy stoei en worstel. Ons gaan nou luister na die potgooi van Bible Projects, en in hierdie potgooi gesels Tim en John oor hierdie drie groot Bybelstories. Die storie van Jesus in die evangelies, die skeppingsstories in Genesis en die Exodus storie. Dwars deur die Bybel word hierna verwys. Maar interessant genoeg word die meeste verwys na die Exodus storie. Hoekom is dit so belangrik? Tim en John gesels in hierdie episode die Exodus pad en hoe dit die hele Bybel perspektief oor die wêreld vorm en dit beïnvloed en dit verander. Kom ons luister nou na hulle en dan gaan ons in die tweede deel van die program gaan ons weer reflekteer hierdie keer op 'n baie belangrike tema, soos altyd, wat Jesus in Matteus hoofstuk 10 vir ons gee. Bly ingeskakel.
Well, Welcome to the Bible Project Podcast. Today we start a new series that we're calling The Exodus Way. There is a way out of slavery, a way through the wilderness, and a way into the land of inheritance. In this theme conversation, we'll discover that this is not just a journey that ancient Israel went on when they were rescued from slavery in Egypt. It's also the journey we're invited on. In fact, what we'll find is that this is the journey the entire cosmos is on. The path from death into life. The highway through the wilderness. The Exodus way. This theme, more than any other, ties the entire narrative of the Bible together.
The Exodus story, that liberation, rescue through the waters, through the wilderness, into the promised land, that storyline is referenced, referred to, more than any other story.
One of the key moments in the Exodus story is the night of Passover. It's so important that it's celebrated every year for thousands of years with a ritual meal called Passover. And so it isn't random that Jesus chose for his final days in Jerusalem to correspond with the week that leads up to Passover.
Why did Jesus choose Passover weekend and then explain the meaning of his life leading up to that point and of what was about to happen in his death in terms of that bread and the wine of the Passover meal?
The Exodus story gets to the core of what the Christian life is all about. What does it mean to be redeemed by God? What does it mean to be saved?
The words salvation and redemption, these are pretty important words. And they appear first and are given their main definitions in the Exodus story.
Today, as we begin this new theme study, Tim Mackey and I will set the stage for how a life of faith is really a journey. That journey is what the Bible calls an exodus. Jesus saw himself on this journey, and he invites us into it as well. It's the road out, or as they say in Greek, ex haras.
The messianic, Jesus-inspired vision of human life and history. It's an exodus-shaped view of reality.
Thanks for joining us. Here we go. Hey, Tim.
Hey, John. Hi.
We are beginning a new theme series.
Yeah, this is a great day. I love these days. It's like
a wide open horizon.
I've really only ever had the experience of sailing on a ship away from a dock once before, and it was with you.
Yeah.
In fact, but just that feeling of sailing off.
What adventure awaits us?
Yeah. Where is the conversation going to go? So, yes, we are beginning a new theme study through the storyline of the Bible of the theme of the new Exodus, or just the Exodus.
The Exodus.
In the story of the Bible. We're going to discover what to call it.
Okay.
In my mind, it was the new Exodus, but it is also going to be about what is the Exodus story and then how it, as a foundation story, gets repeated and echoed and recycled throughout the rest of the Bible.
How is the Exodus story a theme?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's going to be about one part of the Bible, but somehow through that one part of the Bible, we're going to see the whole story of the Bible come together, which is how themes typically work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, but this is unique in that it's a theme where we're starting in Exodus.
Mm.
We've always started a theme in Genesis.
Yeah, and actually, we will.
Okay, we'll actually start in Genesis.
With the pre-Exodus, Exodus.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, Exodus refers to a few things. One, it refers to one of the scrolls in the first main scroll collection in the Hebrew Bible.
Yeah.
That five-part collection is called the Torah.
Yeah.
And then the second scroll is called... Oh, well, in the Christian tradition, it's called Exodus.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which is like a Greek word.
It comes, as far as we can tell, from the Greek manuscript tradition.
Yeah.
And Exodus just means road out of.
Oh.
It's a phrase, actually. Ex, out of, and hados, which means road.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Path out of. In Jewish tradition, the name of the second scroll of the Torah is Shemot, which comes from the first words of the scroll. These are the names, and it gives a genealogy of the descendants of Jacob. And
these are the names is Shemot?
Yeah. Ela Shemot. Ve'ela Shemot.
Oh.
But Shemot is the word for names.
Got it.
Yep.
That's how in Jewish tradition they name the scrolls, is by the...
usually by the first
word.
Yeah, one of the first words that appears in the scroll. So what I'd like to do in this conversation is kind of set the stage as for why the Exodus story ranks as one of the most important stories in the entire Bible.
Hmm.
I mean, if you stop and think, if I know very little about the Bible, what are the things somebody should know? If you're a follower of Jesus, the story of Jesus ranks right up near the top. I think the creation stories, especially the seven-day story and the Eden story, are just like 101. And then coming right in hot alongside those two is the Exodus story.
Let's actually be crystal clear what the Exodus story is.
Well, that's actually, it's a bit more complex of a question than you might think. But in its essence, it refers to the storyline where the main family that's at the center of the biblical story, which is the family of Israel, the descendants of Abraham, they end up enslaved in Egypt and oppressed, and they cry out to God. God raises up a deliverer, Moses, for them. And then there's a big showdown between Yahweh, the God of Israel, and Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, resulting in Passover, where a plague passes through the land, but those whose houses are covered by the blood of the Lamb are delivered from the plague, and they are released to go out of the land into freedom. God rescues them, parting the waters through the sea. They go through the wilderness and on their way to the promised land.
Okay.
That's the
Prince of Egypt. You're telling me the plot of the animation Prince of Egypt.
Yeah, there you go.
Yep. Which they got from the Bible.
Which they got from the Bible. Yeah, they weren't making it up. So my goal in just this first step of the conversation is to convince you or anybody who's wondering, why isn't it just an interesting and important story? Why does it rank among the most category-setting, foundation-setting stories in the Bible? To understand that, let's actually turn to some foundational questions about Jesus and the New Testament that really are only resolved once you see how they connect to the meaning of the Exodus story.
Okay.
For example, why did Jesus choose Passover weekend as the week when he would show up in Jerusalem and poke the bear, that is, provoke Jerusalem's leaders, the priestly and religious leaders, for his showdown with the powers there? Like, it's not random. Every one of the Gospels' accounts has as its whole climax to the story of Jesus presented, with Jesus going to Jerusalem on a particular set of 7 days leading up to a weekend.
Yeah, you're saying when you're reading the Gospels and you're getting to the point where Jesus is going to get arrested and killed, it's the week of Passover.
That's right. And that's not random.
It's not random. And Passover, which you just said, was part of the Exodus story.
That's right. It's part of how the Exodus story resolves. Mm-hmm. One of the main conflicts resolves.
How does God get them out of Egypt?
Yeah.
The whole events that we call Passover.
Mm-hmm.
God's final plague, the 10th plague, putting the blood on the doorway.
Yes.
And that's the Passover feast that every year you celebrate.
Yep. That's right. It's not random, and the gospel authors didn't make this up. Jesus chose that time to go to Jerusalem, and he knew he was going to get killed. He kept talking about it to his followers, and they really didn't understand what he was trying to tell them. So not only that, but then on the night before his arrest, he chose to time it in proximity to the actual Passover meal, like the ritual meal that had been celebrated every year for over 1,000 years, connected to the night they were delivered from Egypt. And then Jesus explained the meaning of his life leading up to that point and of what was about to happen in his death in terms of the actual, like, bread and the wine of the Passover meal. So Passover is of huge significance if we want to understand Jesus. And Passover is like a linchpin moment in the Exodus story. I guess what would be an analogy? It would be someone choosing a certain holiday whose meaning,
to give a big announcement,
is so packed to everyone, and then they do on that day something that gives a twist, and
a twist.
They don't have to use words.
Well, the one that's not a twist is getting married on Valentine's Day.
Oh.
That's just on the nose.
Yeah, totally. Yep, on the nose. You know, in a sense, that would have been a great move.
Just get both.
Yeah, that way you're always
done.
That's right.
And one day
it clears up the confusion. Like, if there's any confusion about, like, isn't every day Valentine's Day? You know, or is it just like, no, let's combine them together? I guess this is, you know, making up something, you know, fictional. But if somebody in America, that's our context, wanted to start a new political or social movement and choosing July 4th, which marks, you know, a war of independence.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
that's where we celebrate independence in America.
That's right. So choosing that day, especially if they didn't even, the person or the group starting it, didn't even have to provide comment.
Ah, everyone would know.
It's so clear.
Okay.
So Jesus choosing Passover as the week of the showdown and Passover meal to explain the meaning of his death. And it's why Jesus' words are so short and cryptic. This is my body, he says of the bread, the Passover bread. This is my blood, he says of the wine. Like those were known
symbols.
It's
easy to forget those were Passover symbols
before
they became communion symbols.
That's right. Yeah, or their meaning as communion symbols is the twist on the meaning that they have as Passover symbols.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just that one right there, like what is more foundational than the story of Jesus' death and the meaning of his death in the Lord's Supper? And the Lord's Supper is a Passover meal. And to understand the meaning of the meal and a Passover, you need to understand what's going on in the Exodus story. So that's kind of, for me, that's low-hanging fruit. Like, oh, I should probably understand the meaning of the Exodus story.
Yeah.
If I want to gain a deeper understanding into the meaning of Jesus' death and of the Lord's Supper, which is a ritual, you know, that most Christians do on a weekly or monthly or some kind of rhythmic basis. Here's another interesting fact that underscores the importance. The words salvation and redemption, I think, are fairly significant to the vocabulary of a follower of Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, particularly salvation. That was a really important word.
Yes, yeah.
From my tradition growing up.
Mm-hmm. These are words that are introduced in the Exodus story, in terms of you're reading from Genesis page 1. There's a couple uses of the root word salvation in Genesis, but they are used most frequent and with their most kind of intensity in the Exodus story.
You're talking about if you're reading through the Bible, you're not going to run across that word until you get to the Exodus story.
Mm-hmm. The idea of rescue or salvation appears one time in Genesis in a poem, not in a story. But the first time it appears in a story with an actual story of salvation, that's an event that's referred to as a salvation story. Mm. It's the Exodus.
Okay.
It's the rescue of Israel leaving their land of slavery into a land of freedom. And that's when the Egyptian armies are storming down the hill. And they go into the sea, which seems like certain death, and then the waters part. And then those same waters that provide a pathway to life for the Israelites are the means of death for the Egyptian armies. And that event is called Yahweh's salvation. Salvation refers to rescue out of danger.
You probably told me that 8 years ago. And it's still hard for me to just remember that's what salvation means at its base.
Rescue from danger.
Rescue from danger.
Yeah.
It's always reorienting to me in a helpful way. And then the question becomes, well, what's the danger? And what's the rescue?
That's right.
And then
and who's the rescuer?
Who's the rescuer?
And then redeem appears for the first time in Exodus chapters 3 and 6. So redemption is a word that actually comes from the economic marketplace about the purchasing of a slave's freedom.
You redeem a slave's freedom.
That's right. Yeah. And we kind of still have that meaning when we use the word in modern English, like you redeem a
token,
a coupon.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're like, I have something that has value.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go redeem it
and get its value
in place of the thing that I am here to get.
So in a way, we say you're redeeming the coupon, but you're really redeeming the
you're redeeming
bag of groceries that the coupon entitles you to.
Yeah. The grocery store has these items on its shelf in its possession. And I have this token or coupon, and I redeem it, and then I get the item.
Huh.
I purchase
it. So wouldn't it be more appropriate to the original meaning of the word to say you're redeeming the box of cereal
that
the coupon's for?
That's right.
But we say you're redeeming the coupon.
Yeah, but it's shorthand for it's like a redemption token to buy the freedom of the cereal.
Yeah.
So that's the economic term.
Okay.
Used about the liberation of the Israelite slaves from Egypt. So the Exodus story provides like a template for both of those words.
Mm.
Somebody is in the possession of another or they are owned by another and their freedom is purchased with some token of redemption. And so they are redeemed. that template becomes a template that can be reused throughout the biblical story. And who's in possession of whom? Who's the redeemer? What's the token or the sign of redemption? Yeah. All of those things can get swapped out.
Who's a slave to what?
Yes. Yeah.
Who's in danger of what?
Yeah. And the same for salvation then. Who's the threat? Who's threatened? What's the danger? And what's the form of the rescue?
Mm.
Yeah. But that's sort of like their story templates that are given their definition here in the Exodus story.
Mm.
So redeem is used in Exodus 6 for the first time, which is where God says to Moses, say this to the Israelites, I am Yahweh. I will bring you out from under the yoke of the Egyptians. That's using the image of a yoke you put on oxen to make them work for you. So treating people like animals, which is what the whole model of slavery is treating humans like work animals. I will free you from being slaves to them, and I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and mighty acts of justice.
Okay. Purchase your freedom.
Purchase your freedom. Yep. And then salvation appears first in Exodus chapter 14, and it's the moment the people are freaking out, standing at the seashore, watching the Egyptian armies come after them.
Yeah.
And Moses says to the people, Exodus 14, 13, don't be afraid, stand still, and watch the salvation of Yahweh that he will accomplish for you today. There you go.
Yeah.
So these are pretty important words.
Yeah.
And they appear first and are given their main definitions by means of this story. Here's some other interesting things about the Exodus story. Within the Bible itself, it is the event that is most referred to by later biblical books and authors. So you remember how years ago we did a series on the most re-quoted or referenced verse within the Bible was from Exodus also, the character of God poem in Exodus 34, verse 6 and 7. So similarly, the Exodus story, which again is that liberation, rescue through the waters, through the wilderness into the promised land, that storyline is referenced, referred to more than any other story, more than even the seven-day creation story. That's really fascinating.
Yeah, it is a long story. There's a lot to reference.
Yeah, true. It covers, multiple books of the Hebrew Bible.
Yeah.
And you can actually do this with a pretty quick concordance search because there's two key phrases introduced in the story itself. The phrase to go out from Egypt, it's the Hebrew verb yatsa, to go out of, and then to go out from Egypt, or the phrase to go up from Egypt. So consistently, to go from Israel-Palestine to Egypt was referred to as going down, yarad, to go down to Egypt. And then to go from Egypt to the land of Israel is to go up.
Okay.
So that phrase, to go out of Egypt or to go up from Egypt, that phrase appears 99 times. Those two phrases, one of those two phrases appears 99 times within the book of Exodus itself.
Okay.
And then as you move on, the phrase to go out of Egypt or to go up from Egypt, referencing back, like these are mentions of the Exodus story going back. 17 times in Leviticus, it's referenced. In the next scroll of the Torah, of Numbers, 32 times the departure from Egypt is mentioned. In Deuteronomy, it's mentioned 56 times. So just within the Torah itself, after it happens, we're referring back to it.
All the time.
Yeah, all the time. And as you go on, it's mentioned 18 times in Joshua. It's mentioned 2 times in Judges, 23 times. In 1st and 2nd Kings, it's mentioned 35 times in the prophets, Isaiah through Malachi. And that's just referring to the event. There are almost 20 times within the Torah and the prophets where this phrase is used, I am Yahweh who brought you out of Egypt. So almost 20 times, from Genesis on through Kings, and then in the prophets, Isaiah and Malachi, 20 times Yahweh defines his identity as the Exodus God.
Yeah, that's his calling card.
Yeah. So it's sort of like saying there's an event that so defines who I am to you.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of an analogy or like a silly equivalent. Well, actually, so there's sometimes in parenting where I'm trying to pull ultimate rank. I'll just be like, you exist because of me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Please help us clear the table. Something like that.
I am your father.
I am your father, yes.
Yeah.
It's that kind of move.
Yeah. Or what's very common in the workplace is your title. I am the, and then you just, the position that you have in the company.
That's right. Yeah, but here the point is the position is defined by an event that took place.
Right.
In the history of a relationship.
Yeah. Yeah, someone always kind of went around and was like, guys, you remember, I'm the guy that landed that deal.
Yeah.
Remember? And you're like, yeah, we hear about it every day, John. You tell us about the deal that you landed.
Totally. It's that coworker. It's that coworker. So, yeah, that's it. Yeah. Anyhow, that's it. I am Yahweh who brought you up out of Egypt.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very significant.
Yeah. Not only is that past event so significant, it's like an identity-forming type of story where it actually becomes a model for how we think about our family story in the present and on, again, into the future. So what's interesting is as you read on into the prophets, like Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, when they anticipate what Yahweh is going to do again in Israel's future, they anticipate it being some kind of repetition or renewal of or replaying of the Exodus story. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they are very explicit about it. I'll just quickly scan two passages here. So one is in Isaiah 11, which is a passage about the rise of a new king from the line of David who will be anointed with God's spirit and wise and bring justice and so on. And then it says in verse 11 of Isaiah 11, it will happen on that day that Yahweh will again extend his hand a second time. So that second time right there, he's going to extend out his hand, which is a key phrase.
In the Exodus story, a key phrase is God extending his hand or Moses extending his hand.
That's right,
on behalf of God, to rescue them. To rescue.
Yeah, the image is like they're enslaved and God reaches out his hand to grab them and pick them up and take them out.
Yeah.
So he's going to do it.
So that's the first time.
That was the first time.
Yeah.
And Isaiah says he's going to do it a second time. To acquire, which is a synonym of redeem, to acquire the remnant of his people that's left in Assyria and Egypt and Pathros and Cush and Elam and Shinar and Hamath. So he's naming all of these lands where the people now are scattered in exile.
Okay. That exile is their own slavery.
It's like a new slavery.
It's a new slavery.
It's a new, a new enslavement. And he will gather up the outcasts and gather the scattered ones of Judah from the four corners of the earth. So all the nations are the new Egypt. And he's going to send out his hand. Verse 15, and Yahweh will divide the sea of Egypt. And you're like, what? Wait, he just said that they're scattered in all nations.
Yeah, there's a lot of seas we're going to need to divide.
Yeah, but notice we're using the Sea of Egypt as like a symbol now for any and all obstacles that will be in the way.
All the chaos waters.
All the chaos waters will become like the Sea of Egypt. And he'll wave his hand over the river, which is likely a reference to the Euphrates River that you'd have to cross if you're coming from Babylon or Assyria. He'll send his scorching wind. Verse 16, there'll be a highway from Assyria for the remnant of his people, just as there was for Israel when they came up from the land of Egypt.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it's very explicit.
This is a new Exodus.
Yeah, new Exodus. So really what I'm hoping for this video is to explore what is the template that's being laid out in the first Exodus story. Mm-hmm. What's the main story beats that make that story what it is? And then how does that story become a template that can get reused and recycled and replayed for later biblical stories leading up to Jesus's story?
Yeah.
And then what we're going to see is that after Jesus gave his followers his story as an Exodus-shaped story, they, then, the apostles, begin to retell the story of the universe as a great big cosmic Exodus story.
Mm.
And in essence, to have a Christian view of reality is to have an Exodus-shaped view of history and of reality.
Big history.
Yeah. Like the whole story of all reality is something like an Exodus story.
Wow.
And that's why I think this matters, is that it's not just Jesus, but then also the apostles who gave like the foundational language for what is the messianic Jesus-inspired vision of human life and history. What is that?
Mm-hmm.
And I think we call it Christianity, or at least some forms of it. And lo and behold, it's an Exodus-shaped view of reality.
Mm.
And that begins life in how the prophets use the Exodus story as a template for what they saw God was going to do in Israel's future.
They're the first ones to use it as a template?
Yes. Yeah, the prophets. Yeah. And then what's cool is as you go back, you begin to see stories in the Torah and prophets that have been given an Exodus template shape in the telling of the story itself. So in a way, the seven-day creation story has within it all of this vocabulary that are all like wink-winks moments forward from the narrator, already laying the tracks for the Exodus story. The creation narrative is a kind of Exodus story.
Okay.
The liberation of Abraham from Egypt and of Sarah from the house of Pharaoh.
Mm-hmm.
The liberation of Hagar and Ishmael from the oppressive home of Abraham and Sarah.
Oh, interesting.
Is depicted as an Exodus, in Exodus language. The cycles of the judges, the imprisonment of Israel to Solomon and the sons of David is depicted as an Exodus story.
You mean when he started enslaving Israelites to do the work?
The kings of Israel become depicted like a pharaohs. Kind of pharaoh, so that now God has to send prophets, new Moseses, to confront the kings of his own people, to liberate them from slavery to their own kings.
Mm.
So all of a sudden, like you can go to all the parts of the Hebrew Bible and the New Testament and you just see the Exodus everywhere.
Okay.
So essentially, that's what the rest of the series is going to be about.
Exodus everywhere.
That's right. Exodus everywhere. I think that's the main point. To be a follower of Jesus, there are actually, other than the creation story and the Jesus story, there isn't really another story that's more important to spend some time focusing on to really understand the essence, I think, of who Jesus is, who he explained himself to be, and then what it means to view reality as one of his followers, to view my life and all of history. All of it is Exodus-shaped.
Mm.
One biblical scholar I learned from is named Brian Estelle, who wrote a wonderful book about this very topic. It's a book called Echoes of Exodus, Tracing a Biblical Motif. He puts it this way. He says, the Exodus motif is the Bible's grand narrative. And it is one of the best stories because it encompasses all the major aspects of God's work of salvation through Christ. Redemption from sin, suffering, and from the tyranny of the devil. It's an exodus from Egypt and from Pharaoh. Bringing us into the presence of God, represented at Mount Sinai. The wilderness wanderings as a pilgrimage towards a special place. The possession of the land of Canaan, ultimately symbolizing entitlement in the world to come, in order to become a unified holy people in a place where they might worship God perpetually. All of this is an Exodus story.
Wow.
And he just painted an outline of like basic Christian belief right there. But all of this raises the question of, okay, the Exodus story is foundational. It's important. But what events are we referring to? Like, what's the template?
Yeah. Well, because he just went through a bunch of events.
Yes. Yeah. So here's a fascinating fact. I think most of us, and it may be just because you and I grew up with the Prince of Egypt, we tend to think of the Exodus story as referring to from enslavement to liberation through the waters.
Yeah. Well, the first half of Exodus.
Yeah, the first half
of the scroll of Exodus.
The scroll of Exodus. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Once they get through the waters, you know, the
like,
movie,
then they're on
the
their
movie
way
ends.
And they're free. Yeah, that's right. The movie ends. What's interesting is when you look at the Exodus story is referred back to multiple times. When later biblical authors retell the foundation story of Israel, they don't stop at the liberation from the waters. They typically refer to the whole arc from slavery into the promised land. So really from Exodus to Joshua. Especially helpful here are like in the Psalms. There'll be Psalms that recite the foundation story of Israel as for why they should praise God or why Israel should trust God. So I'm thinking about Psalm 78, 105, 136, and those all go from slavery to entry into the promised land. Mm. And sometimes they'll tell it in just a few phrases. Mm. But it seems like for later biblical authors, that's the arc. So it's both an exodus, a road out of Egypt. So the Greek phrase exodus is a road out of. Mm-hmm. And then a phrase road into is eshadas. So the biblical authors think of an exodus and an eshadas, a road out of slavery and a road into abundance in the promised land.
Okay.
And that seems to be the arc.
The whole arc.
The whole arc.
That's the exodus.
And when you watch the prophets recall it, they recall the whole arc. But they think of it in a series of beats. And so this is, I want to just introduce this like a little melody here right now.
Okay.
And then we're going to see.
How does the whole arc work?
Yeah. How does the whole arc work? And it works in three basic movements. And it works kind of geographically. So there's a liberation from slavery.
Okay.
What you leave behind.
That's the road out.
It's the road out. And there's a whole bunch of things that happen to make that liberation happen. But that's beat one.
Okay.
Beat number two is then the passage in between through the wilderness.
Okay.
And a bunch of things happen in the wilderness.
The road within.
But the road, like the path, the road between.
The road between.
The road out, the road between.
Okay.
And then into the promised land to be with God.
Okay. The road in.
That's the road in. The road out, the road between, the road in. Out of slavery, through the wilderness, to the promised land.
That's the Exodus proper.
That's right.
So then, calling it Exodus, you're referring to it by its first beat, really.
That's a good point.
Should we call it something else? I mean, it's not the Jewish way of referring to it, right?
I guess that's a decision that we can make right now. I'm just putting this reality in front of us, and I think we need to sort this out.
When,
like, what do we want the video to be
about?
When
the prophets refer back to it by using hyperlinks, the phrases they typically use are?
Well, we just looked at an example in Isaiah 11. And notice he says, he begins with the Lord will extend his hand a second time to acquire the remnant of his people that are.
Yeah, that's the road out.
That's the road out. He will divide the sea and make it passable by foot. So that's, I guess that's a rescue. It's after they leave Egypt, but then it's a rescue out of.
Yeah, it's kind of still the road out.
Still the road out. And there will be a highway from Assyria for the remnant of his people. That's the road between.
The road between.
It's a brief reference, but he's referencing the road between. Here's a reference in Hosea chapter 2, which is in the setting of the prophet's complicated relationship with his wife, Gomer. Who he married, and then she left him for another man and become a sex worker, a prostitute. And then that becomes an analogy for Yahweh and the people of Israel. And so after Gomer has left and Israel is depicted as that unfaithful wife, what Yahweh says is, chapter 2, verse 14, look, I am going to lure her, that is Israel, and bring her into the wilderness. So here, the exodus, the road out, is just referred to in one little phrase. I'm going to lure her out of her unfaithfulness, which is a kind of slavery.
Okay.
And here the focus is
into the wilderness.
Into the in-between place.
Yeah.
And there in the wilderness, I will speak kindly to her. Then I will give her vineyards and the valley of Achor, which is the Hebrew word for trouble, which is an event. Happened in the book of Joshua, connected to a guy named Achan. who got Israel in trouble in Joshua. In other words, this valley where a terrible thing happened will pivot and become a door of hope. And she will sing there as in the days of her youth, just as in the day when she came up out of Egypt. Mm.
So the vineyards, this new place of hope, that's the road in.
That's like the new promised land.
That's the new promised land.
Yeah.
Okay.
So note, this is all referred to as coming up out of Egypt, but the focus here is the road in between and then the road into. Mm. So it's kind of a package because you don't leave something without having a destination to go. I guess you can. You can leave something and not know where you're going.
Some of the greatest adventures begin that way.
That's interesting. Not all who wander are lost. Do you know that comes from The Lord of the Rings? We read that story as a family, and I remembered.
Does Aragorn line say it?
Gandalf, the sage wizard, says it about Aragorn, who's sort of like the underdog king figure.
Yeah, okay.
Because he doesn't look or act like a king.
Yeah.
And his image for that is not all who wander are lost.
Oh. There you go.
Isn't that great? Anyway,
Papa told
in this story, you don't leave somewhere without knowing where you're going. And so the Exodus, the road out story, implies that there will then be a road between that will result in the road into the land. And I guess the reason why this is significant is in just those two passages we saw, biblical authors, when they refer back to the whole story arc, there'll almost always be some reference to the going out of Egypt. But then what they might focus on is the road in between.
Okay.
Or they might focus on the road into the new land, but there'll always be some language or imagery about the road out of.
Okay.
So sometimes it'll just be the road out of that's the focus. But other times they'll mention the road out, but really what they want to use is some imagery from the road in between.
And we've really latched onto this word, the road, but is that the right decision?
Yeah. The highway.
The highway.
The road.
Okay. The path.
The path.
Yeah. Narrow is the path.
Yeah. Hmm. I guess, you know what's funny? The idea of doing a video like this was in my mind. I brought it to you in the first list of videos.
Oh, yeah.
When you pitched to me the idea of doing a project like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 10 years ago now.
This was one of the videos. And we actually started one. I've actually been trying to find the document.
Oh, really?
I can't, yeah.
Oh.
Or at least I remember working on the idea to show it to you, and we just ended up never doing it. So it's been in the works for a while, but this has always been a question for me of how we would pull it off. Like, will we just make it the Prince of Egypt version of the story?
Right, yeah.
Or do we try and find a way to do it the way the biblical authors seem to, which is to the whole story in three beats can be called a kind of Exodus story. Anyway, we don't have to solve that right now.
To go back up to the quote, though, he's got Sinai in there.
Yeah, yeah.
That's interesting because I guess that's during the between.
It's in the in between, yeah.
But it feels like more significant than just the between moment.
Yeah. Mount Sinai represents, you know, a 1 year stop in the wilderness on their way to the promised land.
Yeah.
And it contains the two key moments of entering the covenant partnership with God.
Yeah.
And then Israel becoming filled with the presence of God living in their midst.
Yeah.
Those are the two iconic moments of Sinai. But it's very much a temporary stop on the way to the...
Is it a subplot to the Exodus, or is it like, is it the hinge? Is it pivotal?
Well, the liberation out of slavery is about God forming and creating a people. The moment that happens on the road in between is those people are invited to become God's covenant partners among whom he dwells.
Yeah.
That's the key events there that all are about Sinai. And then the road into is there to go into the land.
And then getting the tabernacle and getting...
Exactly. Yeah. That's about God dwelling in their midst.
Yeah, okay.
So think of it as like getting married and moving in together. They're covenant partnerships. Yahweh and Israel gets married at Mount Sinai.
Yeah.
And then Yahweh comes to dwell, to live with them in the middle of the camp. And that's the tabernacle.
Because you could imagine that that story would be the road in, like we're in the promised land, now the wedding feast, now the God's presence is amongst us.
Totally.
It's now happening.
Yeah, exactly.
Now we've made it.
Yeah. In other words, you might think the story would go, let's go out of slavery, through the wilderness, into the promised land, and that's when we get married, yes, and God comes to live with us.
Yes.
And instead what happens is the marriage and the living together happens in between, not when they're landed. Mm-hmm. And once they do get landed, it's an absolute disaster.
Yeah.
And the marriage fractures and the house that they built to live in together forever gets burned down.
Jeez.
Yeah. So what's presented as permanent is actually not land and temple and dynasty and kingdom.
Hmm.
What's presented as permanent is the partnership and the presence of God with his people, even in the wandering wilderness.
Hmm.
It's interesting. That's actually really important, which is why we're going to dedicate another video and whole podcast series to just the wilderness.
Okay.
Yeah. Each of those three movements, the road out of slavery, mm-hmm, the road through the wilderness, the road into the land.
It's all Exodus.
It's all one story arc.
It's all one story arc.
And each one of those three movements kind of has a drop-down list of key
okay
events that define that moment.
So
for the road out of, there's a moment where the blessing of God turns into oppression and slavery.
Mm.
For the good, it turns into bad.
Okay.
So God raises up a rescuer. There's always a rescue figure
okay
in the midst. There's some confrontation that God makes with the oppressor that results in evil being decreated and the oppressed being recreated and formed as his people and rescued in some way. And then there's a rescue, and then there's a meal and a song of celebration.
Hmm.
The meal being Passover and the song of celebration being the song the people sing after they're rescued. And that is Exodus 1 through 15 right there.
Okay.
It's the road out of. That's Prince of Egypt.
Yeah.
Then through the wilderness, there's a couple of key images. There's the image of Israel being guided through the wilderness by the glory cloud.
Hmm. And the pillar of fire.
Yep. Being provided bread and water in the wilderness.
Hmm. Yeah.
And then what we just discussed, the covenant that God makes with Israel, and then God living among them in the form of the tabernacle, God's presence.
Yeah.
That's the road in between.
Okay.
God rescues slaves. He makes them his family.
Mm-hmm.
And then the road into the promised land is all about the inheritance. And the promised land is most consistently referred to as an inheritance of this new mountain, fruitful garden land. And the covenant, it's all about living as the family of God to be representatives to God, to the nations. So that's a basic idea.
Blessing unleashed.
Yeah, it's sort of like back to blessing again.
Yeah.
So the blessing with which we started now is restored in the promised land. So where we're going from here is I want to walk through two sets of stories in Genesis that have been clearly designed with an eye towards the Exodus story that comes later.
Okay.
So you could call them pre-Exodus stories. Sitting right there in the 7-day creation stories and the flood are both designed with an eye towards the Exodus story.
Okay.
To prepare you for it. So that's where we should go next.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Bible Project Podcast. Next week, we're going to look at two stories in Genesis that foreshadow the Exodus story.
It seems that the authors of the shape of Genesis wanted us to see the Exodus itself prefigured and anticipated by key events in the story of Genesis. In the 7-day creation story, you can think of creation as a liberation from chaos and non-being into the blessing of the abundant garden land.
Bible Project is a crowdfunded nonprofit, and we exist to experience the Bible as a unified story that leads to Jesus. Everything that we make is free because of the generous support of thousands of people just like you. Thank you so much for being a part of this with us.
Hi, everybody. My name is Jun, and I'm from Korea.
Hi, my name is Justin. I'm from West Lafayette, Indiana. I first heard about Bible Project when I was searching for a Bible-themed podcast on Spotify.
I first heard about Bible Project on YouTube.
I use the Bible Project for learning more about Jesus, Scripture, and how that's applicable to my life.
My favorite thing about Bible Project is the concept of upside down.
My favorite thing about Bible Project is the podcast. I listen to it all the time.
We believe the Bible is a unified story that leads to Jesus.
We're a crowdfunded project by people like me. Find free videos, articles,
podcasts, classes, and more on the Bible Project app and at BibleProject.com.
Hey everyone, this is Christopher. I handle communications for our patron care team at Bible Project. I've been working at Bible Project for 4 years, and my favorite part about my work is getting to write the prayer email that gets sent out to 80,000 people each month who are praying for our studio and the work that we do. There's a whole team of people that bring the podcast to life every week. For a full list of everyone who's involved, check out the show credits in the episode description wherever you stream the podcast on our website.
Welkom terug by die program Krag van die Woord. Ons het nou ook geluister na hierdie gesprek van Tim en John. En waar ons in hierdie tyd stadig in voorberei, in hierdie adventstyd wat nou kom, om juist te dink en te mediteer, te lees, te bid oor Jesus se koms na hierdie wêreld. As mens, sy geboorte, is dit toch al belangrik om na hierdie drie verhale, die skepping, die Exodus en dan Jesus, om na dit te luister en daaroor te dink. Want die hele Bybel gaan eintlik oor Jesus, God se wyse om ons te kom verlos en om ons 'n nuwe lewe te gee, in hierdie stikkende wêreld waarin ons leef. Maar die wêreld wat hy oorspronklik geskep het, volheid, volmaak, en die mens ook. Maar met die bose, wat die mens ook as bondgenoot gekry het in die wêreld, wat hierdie hele wêreld stikkend gemaak het, die dood ingebring het, kom die Here en hy sê vir ons, die skepping verhaal, dit is wat hy wil. En dit is wat hy geskep het. En dit is hoe dit moet wees. En dit is hoe dit sal wees ook eendag. Want dit kom ook in die Exodus verhaal dan uit, hoe die Here dan oorwin, die bose oorwin. En nou kom ons ook nou vandag en ons luister na Jesus, want ons is nou hier in Matteus 10. Die laaste gedeelte van Matteus 10, soos wat ons deur die boek Matteus werk, om dit te oordink. En in Matteus 10, in vers 32 tot 42, kom ons lees dit saam in die Afrikaanse 2020 vertaling, van vers 32. Baie vreemde woorde eintlik van Jesus, wat in hierdie gedeelte voorkom. En dit sal goed wees vir ons om dit reg ook te verstaan. Vers 32. Daarom elkeen wat my voor die mense bely, sal ek ook voor my Vader in die hemele bely. Maar wie my voor die mense verloon, sal ek ook voor my Vader in die hemele verloon. Moenie dink dat ek gekom het om vrede op aarde te bring nie. Ek het nie gekom om vrede te bring nie, maar die swaard. Want ek het gekom om 'n wig in te dryf tussen 'n man en sy vader, tussen 'n dogter en haar moeder, tussen 'n skoondogter en haar skoonmoeder, en 'n mens se vyande sal sy eie huismense wees. Wie sy vader of moeder bo my liefhet, is my nie waardig nie. Wie sy seun of dogter bo my liefhet, is my nie waardig nie. Wie nie sy kruis opneem en my volg nie, is my nie waardig nie. Wie sy lewe behou, sal dit verloor. En wie sy lewe ter wille van my verloor, sal dit behou. Wie julle ontvang, ontvang my, en wie my ontvang, ontvang hom wat my gestuur het. Wie 'n profeet ontvang, omdat hy 'n profeet is, sal die beloning van 'n profeet kry. Wie 'n regverdige ontvang, omdat hy regverdig is, sal die beloning van die regverdige kry. En wie aan een van hierdie geringes 'n beker koue water gee om te drink, bloot omdat hy 'n disipel is, amen, ek sê vir julle, hy sal beslis sy beloning nie kwyt wees nie. Hierdie woorde van Jesus is so kragtig wanneer ons dit hoor en verstaan wat hy vir ons sê deur sy gees. Maar kom ons begin anders. Kom ons begin om vandag te gesels eers. Hierdie week vra iemand my, hoe kan sy iemand beraad en help wat met lewens- en verhoudingsprobleme sukkel, maar iemand wat nie glo nie, wat nie gelowige is nie. Hoe kan sy so iemand help om 'n ander siening te hê, om anders te lewe? Nou, my antwoord is miskien vreemd aan haar ook, want my antwoord was aan haar dat gelowiges en ongelowiges sukkel met dieselfde dinge. Sukkel met siekte, sukkel met geld, finansiële probleme. Hulle sukkel met mense wat verkeerd teenoor hulle optree, met hulle self wat verkeerd teenoor ander optree. Hulle worstel met huweliksprobleme, met verhouding met hulle kinders. En Jesus help nie net mense om anders te sien nie. Hy bring 'n heeltemal ander lewe, radikaal anders. So ons kan nie net mense help om dinge anders te sien, hierdie probleme nie. Mense moet eers by Jesus kom. Hulle moet hulle lewe anders sien. Nou, om mense te help, want ons almal sukkel met dieselfde probleme, is om te verstaan wat gebeur in hulle lewe, of hulle gelowig is of nie gelowig is nie. Wanneer hulle huweliksprobleme het, verstaan wat gebeur daar, maar verstaan dan ook wat gaan in die hart aan, waarom hulle hierdie probleme belewe en hoe hulle dit hanteer. Maar verandering kom net wanneer ek radikaal verander in my hart, in my wese. Verandering kom net werklik wanneer my gees en die gees van Jesus, die gees van God, een word. Wanneer ek weergebore word in hom, en een nuwe lewe, nuwe geboorte, nuwe lewe het. Sien jy dit ook so? Of wil jy maar net jou lewe verander? Wil jy net jou lewe soos wat hy is, anders lewe? Of verstaan jy wat Jesus hier eintlik vir ons sê? Dat hy bring 'n radikale nuwe lewe. En Jesus probeer nie ons maar net ooreed nie. Nee, hy het self dit wat hy hier sê, gelewe. 'N totale lewe van liefde gelewe. 'N totale lewe om sy Vader se wil te doen. 'N lewe soos wat God het bedoel het. Jesus self is die nuwe mens. Die nuwe Adam. Die een wat God gewil het. Van die begin af. So my liewe luisteraar, soos wat ons met hierdie probleme sukkel, net soos ongelowig is, is die enigste antwoord ook vir ons, om te verstaan, dat dit wat hy vir ons gee, is iets niets, is anders. Wanneer die gees in ons lewe, Jesus sê nie maar net vir ons lewe so nie, hy het dit self gelewe. En wanneer ons nou hier lees van vaders en seuns en moeders en dogters, en dat daar tweespalt kom, dan is dit nie omdat jy wil tweespalt veroorsaak of dat jy snaaks is nie. Dit is net wie jy nou is in Jesus. Jesus se eie broers het nie, en sy eie familie, broers en sisters het nie maar net die pad saam met hom geloop nie. Toe hy sy lewe begin leef het, die lewe as seun van God, die nuwe mens, die seun van die mens. Ja, hulle het nie saam met hom daai pad geloop nie, hulle het baie teenstand gebied teen hom. Dit het eers later gebeur, dat hulle na Jesus gekom het later, na sy opstanding. Jesus bring 'n nuwe lewe, radikaal anders. En miskien is dit makkeliker om te verstaan as mens, ek dink elkeen weet ook van mense wat in ander geloof gelewe het, en dan tot bekering kom, en dan as gelowige, as Christen, as volger van Jesus, want dan word hulle van hulle families afgesny. Hulle verstaan dit. Vir ons is dit moeiliker wat in 'n christelike samelewing kom, leef, gebore word en leef in 'n familie. Wanneer ek werklik na Jesus kom, wanneer my gees en sy gees een word, en my lewe begin verander. Nie moet ek snaaks wil wees nie, maar dit is wie ek is. Dan is die druk groot. En dit is waarvan Jesus praat. Wanneer ek hom ontvang en hom volg, dan verander dinge radikaal. En dit is waar hy sê, wie sy lewe wil behou, sal het verloor. En wie sy lewe terwille van my verloor, sal dit behou. So wanneer ons hom volg, is dit nie maar net om 'n paar dinge anders te doen nie. My sieninge oor dinge te verander. Alle reëls te kry om te lewe. Onder gewoontes om aan te leer, om kerk toe te gaan, te bid en Bybel te lees. En dit is veel dieper as dit. Dit is Jesus se lewe, sy geregtigheid te ontvang. 'N nuwe hart, wat dan my denke en my optrede dan verander. My dade wat uit 'n nuwe hart uitkom. Dis wat Jesus vir ons gee. Klink nie net radikaal nie, dit is radikaal. En daarom is dit vir ons soms so moeilik om te verstaan. Ook wanneer hy sê, ek het nie gekom om vrede te bring, maar die swaard. Ek het gekom om 'n wig in te dryf tussen 'n man en sy vader, 'n dogter en sy moeder. So die Here sê, dis vir ons, wat hom wil volg, en ons wat hom volg, in jou lewe moet dit 'n werklikheid wees dat jy nie dink. Dat jy verander. Dat jy radikaal anders is. Of wil jy ook, soos ek ook baie keer, maar klou in die ou manier van denke en dinge wat vir my belangrik is, vind ek myself dan dat ek van die ou dinge begin doen weer. Of weet jy ook hierdie lewe wat jy ontvang in die Here, sy geregtigheid, is 'n nuwe manier. Is 'n ander manier. Is radikaal. En is jy gereed? En is jy gewillig om dit te leef? Kom ons kyk verder hierna, na die musiek en na verstaanis wat Jesus sê, sodat iets nuut in my kan begin ontspring en groei, die lewe van Jesus. Bly ingeskakel. Welkom terug by die program Krag van die Woord. En ons oordink in die woorde van Jesus, dat hy nie gekom het om vrede te bring, maar om 'n wig in te dryf in al hierdie verhoudings wat hy hier beskryf, familie, nabij mense, en hoe dit as ons lewe behou, ons het sal verloor en ons lewe wil behou, die ou lewe, sal ons bereid is om dit te verloor, sal ons die lewe ontvang. Hoe verstaan ons dit? Hy sê vir ons uit ek hier hoe radikaal anders hierdie lewe is in hom. Want natuurlik lees ons in die res van die woord, lees ons dat ons mekaar moet lief hê, dat ons ook vir ons families moet omgee, moet sorg, moet kyk na hulle. Ons lees van die eenheid tussen man en vrou, ouers en kinders. Wat bedoel die Here dan hier? Wat sê hy wanneer hy sê dit, wanneer jy hom volg, dan is dit radikaal anders. Ons moet baie mooi verstaan, hierdie is nie, wat Jesus sê, is nie om 'n rebel te wees nie, om jouself te probeer bewys aan anders, aan ander, om anders te wees nie, om watter rede ook al nie. Nee, die Here wil vir ons hier en sê, jy is anders. Jy hoef nie anders te wil probeer wees nie. Jy hoef nie te sê, nee, maar ek moet eintlik so wees nie. Nee, hy sê, jy wat in hom is, jy het verander. Jy is een met hom. Sy gees leef in jou, vul jou. Jy word hier die bron van, jy word soos 'n fontein wat altyd vars water hê, want jy lewe uit hom uit. Dit is Jesus se lewe, sy geregtigheid wat jy ontvang het. Jy sê nie maar net, hoe kan ek nou soos Jesus wees nie? Jy is anders. Want sy gees is in jou. Jy is een met hom. En dan, as jy soos hy is, dan is jy radikaal anders. Hy was heel anders. Nie anders soos die wêreld wil hy anders wees nie. Nie argument en argument, nie haat nie, nee, inteendeel. Hy is liefde en hy het uit liefde gelewe en gehoorsaam met aan die Vader. Maar hy het dit anders verstaan ook, nie om in opstand te kom, nee, maar is om heel te wees in hom. Een mooi voorbeeld om dit te verduidelik, is sekerlik, daar's baie voorbeelde wat ons het, en jy het ook sekerlik sekere voorbeelde in jou lewe. Maar een van die mooi voorbeelde vir my, nog in die geskiedenis van die nuwe lewe in Jesus in die kerk, is die lewe van Sint Francis. Hy het groot geword in 'n baie ryk familie, en hy het, toe hy tot bekering gekom het in die Here, toe hy die nuwe lewe in die Here ontvang het, het hy sy hele lewe het verander. Nie moet hy snaaks wou wees of anders wou wees nie. Nee, hy het sy familie agtergelaat, iets waaroor sy pa bitter woedend was, want hy moes hom opvolg, hy moes hierdie familietradisie voortsit. En hy het gegaan en 'n gewone, eenvoudige lewe gelei. Hy het 'n lewe gelei soos Jesus se lewe. En daarom word sy lewe vir my baie mooi beskryf, soos in sy die gebed van Sint Francis. Maar wanneer ons dit nou deel met mekaar en daarna luister ook, dan moet ons onthou dat dit is omdat sy hart verander het. Dit is omdat hy in die gees begin lewe het. En daarom is dit anders. So hier is sy gebed. Nie iets waar, ideaal waarna jy hoef na te streef nie. Nee, meer as 'n voorbeeld van wanneer jy in hom is, dan is hierdie dinge waar van jou. Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. Where there's hatred, let me sow love. Where there's injury, pardon. Where there's doubt, faith. Where there's despair, hope. Where there's darkness, light. Where there's sadness, joy. O Divine Master, grant that I may not so much seek to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. For it is in giving that we receive, it is in pardoning that we are pardoned, and it is in dying that we are born to eternal life. Prachtige woorde om ook na die lied te luister. Maar hier is maar een voorbeeld waarvan Jesus praat. Dat wie sy vader bo my lief het, of sy moeder of seun of dogter, is my nie waardig nie. Want hierdie lewe in hom, liewe luisteraar, wanneer jy in Jesus is, dan is jou lewe anders. En as dit nie anders is nie, kom dan terug na hom, in sy gees. En leef deur hierdie nuwe gees in jou, om juis hierdie lewe van vlees waarin jy gewoond is, die wyse waarop jy dink, dat het verander deur hom. Hoe radikaal is jou lewe dan? Hoe anders is jou lewe? Kom na hom toe, om deur hom en uit hom te kan lewe. Radikaal anders as alles rondom jou. Kom ons luister na musiek en dan kom ons terug om nog hier verder oor te reflekteer. Bly ingeskakel. Welkom terug by die program Krag van die Woord. Wanneer een mens hier oor mediteer in die woorde van Jesus, wat so radikaal klink en is ook, Dan dink 'n mens, dan dink ek baie keer, ons is so op 'n manier, so in hierdie sintuiglike lewe vasgevang, dat ons baie keer ook in die nuwe lewe in Jesus wil beskryf in al hierdie, jy moet so wees en jy moet so optree en jy moet dit doen. En ons verstaan nie dat hierdie dinge, wanneer ek in Jesus is, wanneer ek weergebore is in hom, dan begin ek anders dink. Ja, daar is hierdie, Paulus praat ook daarvan in Galasiërs 5, hierdie oorlog tussen my vlees en die gees. Maar wie ek is, is in die gees. Ek is 'n nuwe mens, dit sê Paulus ook duidelik in dieselfde hoofstuk, Galasiërs 5. En dis 'n radikale lewe, is anders. En het kan het baie moeilik maak vir jou. Nie omdat jy anders wil wees nie, nie omdat jy wil bewys dat jy anders is nie, maar omdat jy anders is in jou hart. Daar is 'n eenvoudige lewe wat uit jou stroom. En daarom, omdat mense ook baie keer die woord ook so moralisties lees, jy moet dit en dit doen, en Jesus sê hier, hy kom om 'n wig in te dryf tussen 'n vader en 'n seun. Dan sê dit nie, nou moet jy jou rug draai, die een op die ander nie. Jesus bedoel nie dat as jy hom volg, dan moet jy teen jou familie draai nie. Nee, glad nie, dis nie wat hy sê nie. Hy sê net hiermee dat jou lewe radikaal verander, want jy het nou sy lewe wat jy leef deur die gees, en nou oefen jy dit in hierdie lewe, al is hierdie wêreld nog stikkend en donker en in opstand teen God, jy volg hom en dit maak jou radikaal anders. Ja, Jesus het dit nog na hierdie woorde van hom ervaar, hoe sy disippels sien homself gedraai het en weggehardloop het. En Jesus weet, ook hier alreeds, dat Peter sou hom verloon, en Judas sou hom verraai. Hoe sal ons dit ooit regkry dan? Jesus praat van 'n nuwe lewe, 'n volle liefde, 'n onderste bo lewe waar jy self jou vyande lief het. Maar jy is anders. Jy volg hom en jou lewe lyk soos Jesus se lewe. Selfs sy disippels het, nadat hy opgevaar het en hulle die blye evangelie uitgedra het in die wêreld, hulle vroue of hulle susters saamgeneem, staan in 1 Korintiërs 9 vers 5, lees ons daarvan. Ja, Jesus sê nie, omdat jy nou Christen is, nou moet jy moet anders wees as almal rondom jou. Jy moet jou eie kop volg, jy moet rebelleer teen alles, en nee. Hy sê, wanneer jy hom volg, dan lyk jou lewe soos syne, en dan leef jy in die gees, jy leef in geluk met die gees, soos Paulus ook in Galasiërs 5 sê. Nou kan jy sê, maar hoe sal ek dit ooit reg kry? Petrus het hom verloon. En selfs later, toe Petrus deur die Here herstel is en Petrus leier van die kerk geword het, het daar soveel dinge wat nog skeef geloop het. Hy het nog steeds moes hy stoei met die ou mens, maar dis nie meer wie hy is nie. Dis so helder en duidelik in alles wat Petrus ook skryf. Hy is in Jesus en hy volg, hy luister na die gees en hy volg Jesus. Enig iets minders sal ongemak en onvervuldheid in jou bring. En dit sal nie moontlik wees om in gelid met die gees te lewe, uit die gees te lewe. Jy weet, wanneer jy in hom is, dat jy anders is. Jy ervaar dit in jou lewe. Ja, dit bring baie konflik in jou. Maar jy weet, wat is die pad van Jesus? Nie net uiterlik nie, net in jouself, in jou gees. En dan weet jy hoe jy kan en wil lewe. Dis nie maar net 'n ideaal nie. Dis nie maar net 'n manier om te dink nie. Dis nie maar net 'n godsdienst nie. Dis 'n nuwe lewe. Dit is die lewe van Jesus wat in jou roer en gebeur. Hoor jy die Here se woorde? Voel jy die beweging van die Gees in jou? Leef dit. Jy kan nie maar net vasgevang bly daar waar jy is nie. Dan moet jy 'n ander pad volg as jou pa of jou ma. Dan doen jy dit in liefde. Hy nie in haat en ruzie. Jy loop hierdie nuwe pad, al is dit ongemaklik en moeilik. Wanneer God jou 'n nuwe lewe gee deur sy gees, is dit nie net in gedagte nie, dit is jou hele wese wat verander, jou identiteit. Daarom sê Jesus, wanneer hierdie lewe in hom 'n deel van jou word wie jy is, jou identiteit. Dan sal hy, die Engelse vertaal, dit Engelse vertalings vertaal dit met, he will own you before the Father. Hy sal jou besit, om dit in Afrikaans direct te vertaal. Hy sal jou erken voor die Vader. Maar nie net sê die, maar jy is deel van hom. Alle wat hulle lewe verloor, sal het wen. So my liewe luisteraar, is jy gereed? Is jy gereed om radikaal diep in jouself veranderd te word deur die Here self? Kom saam met my na hom. Here, ek wil nie maar net anders lewe nie. Anders wees nie. Ek wil in my volle mens wees, verander. Ja, ek weet hierdie stryd is in goed en kwaad sal nog steeds voortwoed in my. Maar Here, ek wil myself oorgee aan U. Verander my, vir my hart, my identiteit. Kom in my, Heilige Gees, dat my gees in U dieselfde word. En laat haar dan lewende water uit my binneste vloei. Te midde van al die probleme, Heer, dat ek anders dit sal verstaan. Omdat ek anders is en in die koninkryk behoort, die koninkryk van die lig. Heer, dat ek 'n ander betekenis sal kry in my lewe. En dat ek hierdie vrede sal hê wat alle verstand te boven gaan. Hierdie liefde wat so ver uitreik, omdat U dit vir my gee, U liefde, U lewe, wat U volmaak gelewe het op aarde, dit gee U vir my, dis wie ek is. Dankie Here, dat ek dit kan ontvang. Dankie dat selfs 'n beker water aan iemand wat dors is, vir my 'n vreugde word om dit te kan gee. Of wat U ook al van my vra, vergifnis, genade, goedheid aan andere, selfs al doen hulle kwaad aan my. Dat ek hier waar ek is, soos een fontein word. Want U gee my die vars water, U gees is die vars water in my. Wees toch met elkeen van ons, Here, ook hulle wat U nie ken nie, dat hulle nou dit hoor en na U kom. Want dit is wat U wil hê. Groot en goed is U nie. Dankie Jesus. Dankie vir hierdie lewe wat U gee. Amen. Dit was heerlik om saam met jou hierdie tyd te deel. Ervaar dit, leef dit. Radikaal anders. Tot volgende week. Tot ziens.
Hierdie inset was aan jou gebring met die komplimente van Radio Kaapse Kansel 729 AM. Besoek ons gerus by www.capepulpit.co.za.